I'm wearing my Joni Mitchell shirt in honor of the Joni Mitchell song.
I was listening to that song. I was listening to the River song.
I don't know. Which one's that?
Coming on Christmas, cutting down trees, little reindeer, and enjoying peace. Oh, I wish I had a river. I could skate away. You never heard that song?
That's Joni Mitchell?
Yeah.
I know like a limited number of her songs, but the ones I know I love.
Yeah. She's very talented.
I feel it in my fingers.
In my fingers.
I feel it in my toes.
Feel it in my toes. Yeah.
Christmas is all around me.
I'm so excited about this episode. I'm so hyped.
Why?
Because I've been waiting for so long to have a platform to talk about this movie to a broader audience.
So what are we talking about?
Love Actually
is all around.
Oh, Love Actually, a 2003 rom-com featuring about 80% British cast.
It's an all British cast except for like two people, like Laura Linney.
January Jones.
Oh, that's three. Oh, right. There is. Yeah, I forgot about them.
There's a few American actors, but the stars are Hugh Grant, Liam Neeson, Colin Firth, Keira Knightley, Emma Thompson, Bill Nye, Alan Rickman, Andrew Lincoln, Martin Freeman, Lauren Linney.
This rivals like a Harry Potter movie or a Game of Thrones for like the amount of like recognizable British actors. Just like, oh, they're all in it. Even Rowan Atkinson, Mr. Bean, is in it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's like such a crossover. And it's really funny when you think about British movies in general like this. It's like they're written for an American audience because they're like, well, who are the big, I mean, Britain is only so big, right? So you have like, how many connections to Harry Potter does this movie have? Like you got Emma Thompson, you got Snape.
Bill Nye is in it, I think. Why was Mr. Bean not like a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher one year?
Hugh Grant should have been in Harry Potter. That was a missed op.
Yeah. Yeah. Was Liam Neeson? Liam Neeson feels like he might have been in it and I just forgot, but I don't think he was in Harry Potter.
Oh, I could see Liam Neeson.
As maybe he did a voice of a werewolf or something. He has the gravitas.
Yeah. Oh, totally. And they could have totally just put like Liam Neeson as like, you know, a featuring Liam Neeson. He has one line.
He should have been in the sixth Harry Potter. And at the end it says, and introducing Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
Wait, I have to start. I don't know how we're going to talk about this movie in terms of plot. Because there is.
No, I'm going to give you 30 seconds. I'm literally setting a timer now for 30 seconds. All right, go.
A bunch of white people find love. Done.
That's impressive.
You look at the poster here. It's 10 people. They're all white. I'm not calling this movie out for just being, I mean, it is a very white movie, but like, you know, that's just, but there are like, you know, there are black characters. They're just kind of,
there's one.
The main one is Chiwetel Ejiofor. There's two.
Okay. There's two. And the one shows up twice in two different roles.
Hey, what are you doing here? It's like at the very end when he talks to Martin Freeman, hey, what are you doing here?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's his role is to then talk to Colin Frizzell. He's just like, you're crazy, man. You're crazy. That's all he does.
Yeah. Let's break down the love stories. All right. Or let's attempt.
How about I'll pick, I'm looking at the IMDb. I will pick a character. I'll say the actor name. And then you tell me what their story is. You just tell me what you remember.
Okay. Let's do that. Okay. Ready? Go.
Chris Marshall as Colin Frizzell.
His role is to get laid by American women. Go. Next.
Laura Linney.
Laura Linney wants to bang her coworker, but her mentally ill brother gets in the way. Next.
Andrew Lincoln.
He is weird and creepily obsessed with his best friend's wife. Next.
Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's part B of the same story, but Chiwetel Ejiofor.
He's married to Keira Knightley. That's literally
his entire just does
life.
Nothing. He just sort of sits there.
He does nothing. Yeah.
And it's Chiwetel Ejiofor. He's a great actor. Okay.
Wasted talent. Wasted talent.
Hugh Grant,
Prime Minister of England, wants to bang his non-fat, fat secretary woman thing. They never actually explain her job. They never explain what she does. She's just woman. like she's just a woman who works for Hugh Grant.
Bill Nye. Bill Nye the science guy. Bill Nye the science guy. Okay, go ahead.
Bill. Interesting fact. Bill Nye and Keira Knightley are both in Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah, there you go.
Again, the island is small.
Yeah.
Bill Nye is a rock star and is in love with drugs and his assistant. Next.
Liam Neeson.
Liam Neeson, wife died and died in real life. We'll talk about that later. Very sad. And tries to help his son make a woman fall in love with him without talking to her.
Mm-mm-mm. Emma Thompson.
Oh, the saddest of them all. Emma Thompson is a strong-willed, opinionated wife who, you know, is just too opinionated for poor Alan Rickman, who needs someone younger and tighter and just wants to bang him in dark corners. So he turns to his secretary and buys her a sex necklace.
Okay, so that covers Alan Rickman. Anything else you want to add to him?
You know, it's very sad. Like, I love Alan Rickman as an actor, and I don't like what Love Actually. I don't like the... I don't even know where to begin, Matt. I don't know.
Are you talking about this character?
I don't know. This movie.
Wait, we're not done yet. We have one more character.
Oh, one more character. Okay.
Martin Freeman. Did we talk about him?
Oh, Martin Freeman. He is filming a porno with a woman that he falls in love with.
No, that's not a pornography. It's just the sex scene.
There are no other characters. You don't see anything else in that movie.
That's actually a good point. I didn't think about that. It's set in like Venice, it looked like, from what I could tell.
Yeah. When did you first see this film, Matt? Is this been like one of the holiday tradition films for you, or is this like a recent discovery?
No, not. I don't know. I saw it when I was a kid. I remember next to nothing about it, and then I happened to watch it a few months ago, and then I watched it this morning. And I have to say, when I watched it a few months ago, I was like, "This movie is absurd and ridiculous." When I watched it this morning, I thought, this is a lovely movie. and I'm smitten. Oh my God. I can't help it. I'm just like, this is the movie version of Shut Up and Play the Hits. It's Richard Curtis just doing everything to the max. It's just like, Richard Curtis is a good director. I like his movies, his British rom-coms. And it's just like, yeah, let's just take, I mean, I wouldn't even say these are the best parts of these movies, but it's like, everything is just at 11 the whole time. And it's like, yeah, what if he just told a million stories and just cut out everything except like, the beginning and the end, the meet cute, and then the big grand reveal. That's like every story is just like, I mean, obviously there's a little more to it than that, but that's what I remember is mainly the Andrew Lincoln and Keira Knightley thing. When I watched it again, knowing that his whole scene where he shows up with the cards is kind of the most memorable or whatever scene of the movie. When I watched this, I was like, wow, there's like nothing in the middle between we see them at the wedding, we establish, you know, that he's obsessed with her for some reason. And then the end. And it's like, that feels like the whole thing. And I'm like, wow, there's really no meat here. It's just beginning and end.
This movie really is like falls into the, oh my gosh, that's my favorite Hollywood or holiday movie ever. Or, oh my gosh, that is the worst thing ever created. There's not a whole lot of people in between. And it's because this film is in a fantasy land, but it attempts to be based in reality. And I think that's where a lot of people struggle to like it, is because it is so unrealistic. And it's, these stories are just, like you said, they're lacking any kind of substance, any kind of real complications or any kind of, like they throw these conflicts around, like the death of a wife. Or, you know, a misunderstood person, and it just seems like there are so many characters just thrown in here for the storyline that it's just so ridiculous. Like the secretary that bangs Alan Rickman.
Did you go that far?
She is, I don't know. It doesn't matter. She is so... Like, I hate to go there, but she is a female character written by a man. Like, there is, like, she's so just like, I want you now. And you have, there's no, they don't give any reason. They don't give any backstory. They don't give any kind of like insight into why she might want Alan Rickman. She just wants Alan Rickman. And it's just so, it's so convenient. And like, it's.
No, I know what you mean.
And then the whole Colin storyline, like, oh God, like every, that storyline honestly probably upsets me the most is.
Colin Firth?
How, no, no, no. Colin Frizzell.
Colin. That one's the most silly. That one, I remember when I watched that last time, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop. You're like, this isn't going to work. But then I guess that's the defining one of the whole movie. It's the best, you know, symbol of how this movie is just pure fantasy. It's his fantasy in that case, but.
And so my point is, if you can get past all the silliness and like get past the whole stupid opening of Hugh Grant saying like, love is actually all around, like trying to ground it in reality. Honestly, if they took out the whole airport thing and the introduction made by Hugh Grant, it probably would have been a better film.
Wait, but then it wouldn't make sense because they end at the airport. So you need the beginning airport to bookend the end. I mean, then.
take out the fucking airport.
Like, I love the airport.
I think the fact that they're trying to ground this in reality makes it hard to love. It really does, because it's so ridiculous and it's just completely just playing with love and making it like this really, like the Colin storyline is like, he's not, what does that have to do with love? No, he just wants to go get laid and that's fine. There are movies based off of teenagers wanting to get laid, like i.e. American Pie. Like that whole franchise is just about teenagers getting laid and it's totally fine. But don't try to disguise it as like, it's a love story. Look how cute. He's going to America and wants to just bang these women. And like, he's just throwing sandwiches at people and telling them to like sit on his hoo-ha. Like that's not exactly the same thing as, you know, meeting somebody and falling in love with them. And it's almost degrading the term. It's stripping love of any substance and just saying like, love's all around. It can be in this British guy just trying to bang a bunch of women in a bar.
No, I agree. That doesn't really fit. But that's probably my least favorite storyline. I wonder how this movie was conceived. Like, did Richard Curtis and whoever else was involved in the process come up with like 50 subplots and then they have to cut them down to 8? And if that's the case, how did the Colin Frizzell one make the cut? Like, I'm surprised what they liked about that.
So I did research on this and there were actually 14 love stories and 2 were clipped in the scripting phase, but 2 were actually shot and cut in post. So those lost before production involved a girl with a wheelchair and one about a boy who records a love song for a classmate who ultimately hooks up with his drummer. And then another one was shot but cut for time, was a brief aside featuring an African couple supporting each other during a famine. And another storyline that followed home, or that followed home, a school headmistress revealing her longtime commitment to her lesbian partner. If you notice, all the stories that were cut featured people who were either not white or disabled or in a not heterosexual relationship. And it just kind of begs the question, like, you really chose Colin's story to go to America to just bang women over one of these stories with possibly more substance.
You know what's funny about all that is the Colin Frizzell story. I will say, as an actor, the guy who played Colin, I liked him. I was like a good performer and I thought like he's playing the character well. You know, the character, there's other stuff around that, but his performance, I was like, maybe they were just so charmed by him. They're like, yeah, we enjoy him, you know? And then like, I just feel like they're just trying to throw out these tiny hooks to just like literally have something for everyone except, you know, non-white people, but everyone else. that's what the movie's aiming for.
And that's ultimately like, there's just so many issues with this film and like the two actors meeting because they're naked and it just like didn't feel needed. Like it just felt like, but there are so many different, I felt like it was just so like
it's low hanging fruit. It's low hanging fruit, but I gotta be honest, I enjoyed all of the fruit. I was prepared not to like it, and maybe it's just like a song that you've heard a million times. I'm like, you know what? I'm starting to get the rhythm and the beat, and like, it's just sugar for two. It's a long movie. It's too long, and everything with Hugh Grant, I loved. I don't know why. I just really like Hugh Grant, and and yes, all the weight stuff didn't really age well. But I did.
Oh my god! Know. Oh, I don't even get me started on the fat shaming. It's just so. Okay.
Just that line where the person tells Hugh Grant about her being overweight, and he just are we sure about that? Like his delivery.
I wrote down the quotes that make me cringe the most. Are you ready? It's the most cringy quotes part of it. Okay. First one, get a grip. I'll try to do my best English accent as well. Get a grip. No one's ever going to shag you if you cry all the time.
I mean, you gotta push yourself to get out there. You know, we all, you know, you gotta. I don't know.
Man just lost his wife. That's his sister telling him that.
Yeah, I guess that is. Yeah, they did just have the funeral, so it was a little
And he lost his wife in real life. Like that.
But that happened 5 years later. I mean, not that it's, you know, but that.
No, I know. But it's just horribly ironic and makes it really cringy when you watch it, because everyone's making fun of him because he's so depressed. And then you think about, oh God, like, I hope he never rewatches this.
Yeah, I know. Seriously, I was thinking that. Like, this is rough. It was just sad. Also, can we talk about his kid? Because his kid just looks like a pissed off Furby.
His kid is an actor. He's in like
Hunger Games. He's in Game of Thrones.
Yeah,
He's in Game of Thrones.
This kid, like, okay, let's talk about this story, because this is another one that really upsets me, because here his dad is grieving, and he lost his wife, and his sister comes over and is like, and I guess he's also brother to the prime minister, but they never talk about that. Hugh Grant never calls in, and they never talk, but I guess they're brothers.
Wait, I guess, yeah, because Emma Thompson is related to each of them.
Yes, it just feels like this was so like lazily strung together, and they actually didn't think through all the relationships of the different people.
How is he?
They were like,
connected everyone. Let's have Emma Thompson show up again.
Yeah, let's just have Emma Thompson be the annoying sister. Yeah, you know, like, so she's just a bitch.
They just didn't have a scene where Hugh Grant's like, "Hey, just checking up on you. How you doing?"
No, he's too concerned with Fatally.
Oh jeez, oh Brie. I mean, come on.
Yeah, so he's this depressed guy, and he's trying to get over his wife, and Emma Thompson comes over and is like, "Buck up, go get laid. What are you doing?" He's like worried about his kid, because his kid is not talking because his mom just died. Hello, it's not even his kid; it's his stepkid.
Yeah,
and so he just lost his mother. Like, give him a break. So then he gets it out of his kid. What's wrong? Well, I'm in love. And this whole storyline is this kid who's in love with this girl. First of all, chill the fuck out. You're 11. Like, you're not in love with her.
Well, when you're 11, everything's all consuming, right?
I guess, but like, they watch Titanic together. He buys drum sets. Like, just talk to her. He's like, how can I get this woman to fall? How can I get this girl to fall in love with me?
Yeah.
Like, how can I force her to love me? And it's like, you're 11. A, problematic. Two.
Well, it's a problematic. She's 11 too.
But
he's a romantic. He's a kid. He doesn't know what he's doing.
He's never spoken to her. What is it? It's dad. Be like, well, have you tried talking to her? Like.
No, he's 11. He's 11. He's just a little. I will say he's half adorable and half terrifying to look at. Like, he just looks like he looks like the type of kid or the type of creature, really. I mean, he's an adult now, so I can. It's okay to make fun of. He's half adorable, but then he also has these like beady eyes that when he looks mad, and he looks mad a lot, especially when he's drumming at the end and she's singing like, all I want for Christmas is you. And she points at him and he's like, yeah, I got the thing I wanted. And then she points to someone else. And you see that look in his eye. That look could kill. Like, this kid could snap. And he's just like terrifying. Like, I'm just like, this. You do not want to be on this kid's bad side.
No, and he seems kind of like a brat, to be honest.
Yeah.
The drum set to impress a girl that he's never spoken to. Like, what in the hell is going on? Like, this is just it's just so insane. It's like a bunch of Hollywood producers, like, well, what do you do? Like, I don't know. I guess buy a drum set, try to impress her. You know, like, it's just a bunch of people who don't actually understand how life works, trying to write a screenplay
about how
life works.
It's not trying to recreate life. I will say the whole thing at the beginning and the end about Love Actually is all around us. Yeah, that is a little, like, you know, thrown on there. This is so far removed from, you know, it's not trying to imitate
it's
life.
Trying.
It's trying. It is. I don't think it is.
Okay, so
it's a Christmas card come to life. It's a Christmas card come, like, that's what it is. It's just, yes.
The Santa Claus is a Christmas card come to life. Tim Allen in any Christmas film is a Christmas card come to life. This is trying to be this, like, really wholesome, like, sweet. It doesn't know what it wants to be. I think that's the problem. It wants to be a sweet family movie, but then there's Bill Nye talking about drugs. There's Colin trying to get laid. And then there's this two couple naked throughout 50% of the film. Like, uh-huh. And then it tries to be kind of a raunchy film, but then also it has this sweet side. Mm. And then,
yeah,
like,
that's a good point.
It's trying to be too many things. And while it's that's what's kind of funny about it and kind of like fantastical about it, it bothers me when a movie with no substance tries to send a message. Like, love is all around, you know, like no, just be silly and stupid. Like, be an American Pie movie about, you know, like, that was really successful and it did its job. Like, don't try to be this wholesome film, but then throw in, like, tits in every other scene. Like, it just isn't frustrating.
It's like the, you know, they talk about glamour muscles, like someone who just works out of glamour muscles instead of, you know, the core muscles. This is like that. Yeah. It's the glamour muscle. It's not love. Yeah. It's infatuation, obsession. It's the excitement of, like, a burst of, like, that, you know, that person, like, provokes something in me. And that's what it is. The only storyline that I think touched on the idea of a longer term love was Emma Thompson and Alan Rickman, and that, like, that story, just because they've been together for however long, I think that was the only one that it wasn't about new love, right? They're all about the newness of something.
So let's talk about that one for a little bit. So Emma Thompson, Alan Rickman, they're married. They have a couple of kids. It's tired. It's a tired marriage. They've been together for a long time. I think she mentions in the script.
13
I think she
years
says
or something.
13 years, yeah. And he comes across the secretary who's planning a Christmas party in 3 weeks. Who plans a Christmas party in 3 weeks? And she's, back to my list of quotes. There's one from her on here. She's looking for a venue. And when she lists out the venue she likes to her boss, Alan Rickman, she goes, oh, I like this venue. There's lots of dark corners for doing dark deeds.
Uh-huh. That's how you should sell it. That's how you sell it to someone.
Okay. No offense to anyone who has never had an interaction with a female before out there, but this script was written by a man who has never interacted with a woman. It is in the mind of an 11-year-old boy who's like, this is how I want it to play out. This is how women are in the office. Like, this is written like it's a mind of a young boy who is envisioning what the future will be like if they become a successful investment banker.
If you win capitalism, this is your reward.
Yeah, if I become a successful man on, you know, Wall Street, this will be my secretary, and she's just gonna, like, throw her,
you know,
vagina at me.
This is kind of speaks to something I never liked about certain movies and shows where they always establish a character like a Jack Bauer type of character, very manly, strapping. And then there would always be women throwing themselves at him. And he's the one who's like, no, like, this is, don't, like, he's the one who's, like, taking the high road where he's like, why are you doing this? It's like, well, this was probably written by a man who's, but like it's a very weird psychological thing.
It's like every Adam Sandler film. Like, think about every Adam Sandler film. His wife or girlfriend or whatever is always significantly more attractive than him.
But I mean, like, in this, it's like a situation where the guy, like a very attractive woman or character, is throwing herself at this guy, and the guy is like, no, like, don't do this to yourself. Like, don't, like, the guy, like, it's just this weird level of like, no, I'm saying no to prove that I'm above this or something. It's just like, it's always so weird to me when that would happen. I'm like, you know, you don't have to write that scene. Like, you don't need that. You don't. I don't know. It's just to establish some weird power dynamic that's like really, yeah, it's really kind of screwed up.
I understand what the story they wanted to tell. They wanted to tell a story of this couple who's, you know, their light was flickering. It was not as bright as it once was, but they just could have done it with, like, he could have just had a friend who she just could have been a person.
Laura Linney.
It could have been. Yeah,
they it could have
been Laura, but no, she had to be like this sex goddess who just talked about sex and like you didn't actually understand what her job was other than booking this Christmas party and talking about sex. And you're just like, why does she have to just be dripping in like seduction? Like, that's not how it works. And it just,
but who knows? Maybe that's why he hired her. Maybe he hired her because she was like, on her resume it said seductress, and he's like, well, I guess I'll hire her and just see what happens. No, I agree. It's like very, it's again, it's low hanging fruit. All these stories are told so quickly because there's so many to tell that it's like, what's the quickest way we can convey a point? It's like, okay, boom, this woman like sits a certain way, says this thing, we get it. And it's just moving as quick as possible. And then you have that scene with Mr. Bean where he's like wrapping the package for Alan Rickman. And that's like the longest scene in the movie. And I was like, man, they really just slowed everything down for this.
Yeah, which felt weird. Like, I understand it was trying to be, again, like, I like Mr. Bean too, but I don't want him in, you know, like, I don't want him to pop up in Schindler's List. Like, it just like, like, I like a lot of things, but it's there's just a time and a place, and it just felt weird.
Also, this movie is a kitchen sink movie.
It's
not about love. I mean, it is funny that it says love at, like, oh, this is,
it is a British, actually. It's a British smoothie.
No, it throws everything out there. It's definitely not really love. It's the, I don't know, it's infatuation. But it does feel like the type of movie that a family would watch together. Like, they put it on at a holiday setting, and everyone would be like, ugh. But there is something for everyone. And I don't mean it's like the best thing, but the teenager finds, you know, oh, there's nudity. The teenager's like, yeah, there's Colin Frizzle. The teenager's like, I see myself in Colin. It just feels like that movie that you're forced to watch in some kind of vaguely captive setting, like jury duty, the jury duty waiting room, or I don't know, where it's like you have to be there. Or it's like, let's say this, you watch this movie in class for some reason. You're like, ah, oh, fuck. And then, but you're like, oh, you know, there's something here. But it's all hinges on the premise that you're there unwillingly to watch it.
I understand what you're trying to say. I don't necessarily agree.
Richard
with
Curtis knew people would watch this movie under duress. He was like, this is the type of movie I want to make for people who are actively in unpleasant situations.
People who are in captivity.
It's a really spout.
This movie is just on loop for them. Yeah. And there's got to be something. They find some like glimmer of enjoyment from this film.
Yeah. It's, oh God, I don't even know. Yeah. I'm picturing some really screwed up situations. Like,
okay, let's keep on to the storylines. Let's talk about Natalie and Hugh Grant.
I was smitten with them.
Really?
I just like Hugh Grant, so charming, and like, I don't know, something about Natalie. I'm smitten. I don't know why.
Hugh Grant makes a great prime minister. He does. Like, he's just very charming. He plays the rich Brit really well. The whole fat shaming thing is like, oh God, like she's not even fat.
Her dad calls her plumpy.
The woman is probably a size 6, maybe a size 8. Like, that is not, like, she's not obese at any, it's just insane. It's so bad. Continue my line of quotes that make me cringe.
Yeah.
Spoken from another woman working for Hugh Grant, where her role is never explained. She says, when he asks her, do we think she's fat? And she goes, I think there's a pretty sizable ass there. Huge thighs.
Yeah, that's what you say to the prime minister.
So I read that that role was written for her. The actress is Martine McCutcheon. And so Curtis wrote his screenplay with some actors in mind, including Hugh Grant, Emma Thompson, and McCutcheon. He was so sure was Curtis that he wanted McCutcheon for the role of the love interest to the prime minister that he had the character's name as Martine. Martine? Curtis explained in the DVD commentary that the name was changed to Natalie before McCutcheon's audition so she wouldn't get cocky. He wrote the role for her in mind. And the whole entire premise is that she is fat. Do you see anything wrong with this? Like, this is insane. Like, there's two things. I think we've established the fact that she is not, in fact, obese by any sense of the word. And two, if they wanted to leave the fat in there, like that person's fat, they wanted that to be an obstacle for the prime minister to get over. Why couldn't they have actually hired somebody who is slightly bigger?
Well, it's not an obstacle. Like, I think the fat thing, beyond being maybe a little disrespectful, it's not necessary. It doesn't convey any story point. Like, it's not necessary.
I agree. I don't think it's necessary at all. But I think they wanted some kind of like,
oh, he loves her.
Like in spite of that, you know, like, she's fat, but I'm a good man. Like, that's what's so problematic about that storyline, is that, like, it's trying to paint Hugh Grant as this, like, kind soul who loves this woman anyway, and it's just so terrible. It's so bad.
Yeah, but I will say, I just enjoyed Hugh Grant, everything with Hugh Grant. Dare I say it was sweet? Yeah, I'm not saying it's perfect, but I was just, like, charmed. Hugh Grant's so good at doing all the stammering and all the...
Yes.
Every time early on where he just kind of grumbles to himself because he's just so smitten with Natalie. It's nothing revolutionary. It's all very silly and stupid. But I was just like, yeah, he's doing it well. I'm a Hugh Grant fan. Hugh Grant's a great actor. He's such a good actor.
Yes. Oh, he's amazing. And The Undoing. Oh, Lord. So good. Still haven't seen such it. A good show.
But he's great in that. What's the story about the bear? Paddington. He's really great in Paddington too.
Ah, haven't seen
he's
that.
He's great.
I concur with you in that Hugh Grant plays this bumbling like British man very well. Like he's very charming. He's very funny. He's very dry. Like his sense of humor is so dry. Yes. Aside from the storyline of him and Natalie, I think he's the perfect choice for that role. I do. I think he was actually probably the most entertaining. Like, I enjoyed the scenes of Hugh Grant. Like, I love when he's dancing. And then he's like, the woman's behind him that works for him. And then he sees her and he's like, right, we're going to have to move the meeting to 4.
Like, it's kind of slapstick. Like, and it's very broad, yes. But he's very good at it. He's just good at hitting. He's just good. I don't know.
Agree. And he's very entertaining to watch. Yes. I felt like the whole script took as much thought as the entire relationship between the president and the prime minister. Like that whole like, well, politics, right? Like that whole interaction of like, what are we going to say here that's going to not offend anyone, but get across that the US and the UK don't get along? I feel like that was so hollow, and like nothing was said or anything other than that the president is a scumbag. I mean, they cast Billy Bob Thornton. Like, you couldn't have cast a more scumbaggy person as the president.
Definitely a shorthand, yeah.
I just feel like the whole movie was kind of written that way. Like just kind of took the easy way out. Kind of just took the, okay, what's the quickest way to get there?
I think that was the intention. It was like, how can you set up every storyline as quickly as possible? Actually, kind of taking a step back and thinking about how this movie could be improved. There's a scene where Andrew Lincoln, who's the best man at the wedding of Chiwetel Ejiofor, and
you love saying that name.
Chiwetel. I hope I'm saying it right. Chiwetel. Chiwetel.
Chiwetel Ejiofor. It's a really cool name.
It is.
So he's at the wedding. He's the best man, and I don't know if we know what's going on yet, but Laura Linney pulls Siles up to him and says, "So do you love him or what?" Referring to Chiwetel. Like, do you? And I was like, "Oh, wait, is that what this is about? Like, is he in love with, you know, like the groom for whom he was the best man?" And I thought that would be interesting. And then he's like, no. It's he doesn't say, but we quickly learn he's in love with 19 or 17 or however old she is, Keira Knightley, who was very young at the time. She was very, very young.
Keira Knightley.
Yeah. Okay. Let's mark down the timestamp to edit that out.
What, you don't like my Keira Knightley? That's the one thing I can do is say Keira Knightley as Keira Knightley.
When this movie was released, how old do you think Keira Knightley was?
I know she was 17 when she filmed Pirates of the Caribbean, and Pirates of the Caribbean came out in 2003 as well, so 16.
Yeah, I mean, she 16? Based on the date, she was 18 when it was released, very likely 17 when it was filmed. Yeah, it's just insane. She could have been 17 when they filmed this, and both the other two guys are like, I think, 30 or so. Anyways, to make this a better movie, I think Andrew Lincoln should have been in love with Chiwetel Ejiofor. Like, he should have that should have been it. Or maybe he's in love with both of them, and maybe by the end they have a open relationship. That would be different. That would be something.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Also, I think the seductress and Alan Rickman storyline, she should have ended up with Billy Bob Thornton. You could tie off those two loose ends.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Alan Rickman and Emma Thompson. Like, what do you think their future was? What do you think? How do you think
they work it out, right? Or they just kind of, it's a bump in the road? I mean, I don't know.
Okay.
Like, maybe it's more than that. But I assume that's, I mean, I have seen no reason why they should stay together. I don't know. They don't seem like, again, it's all so yada yada that you're just like, okay. Like, maybe they shouldn't be together. And maybe it's okay if this, if he's so easily tempted by this cartoonish character, and it's like, maybe it's, well, it's like, what's underneath that? What do we gotta? And then the seductress character, yeah, she should be in therapy, and she's like, why do I do this? Like, why do I just get hired a job and just immediately like throw myself at the man with power? Like, if we're gonna investigate that, like, she should be kind of like, yeah, what is this, is a pattern I keep recreating in my life? Like, what is that about? So they should do that. And then what else we have?
No, I think these are great. I think you just take out the Colin storyline. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe you can change it. Maybe he can meet another American girl who's looking to bang a British boy.
Yeah, exactly. That makes sense.
You follow her, and you're like, and she's like, I just really like Harry Potter. Like, I think he's sexy as hell. Like, what's wrong with that? And all her girlfriends are like, oh, ew, weird. And then she meets, and she's like, are you British? And he's like, hey, mate. And then they just like hook up.
She would go to England when he goes to America. We keep seeing them just miss each other. That's in line at the movie. They don't know each other, and they don't know. And then they cross paths at the airport again at the very, very, very end.
Oh.
He's the last person whose story hasn't been resolved. And then
she's in his seat.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There you go. Yeah.
On the plane.
They each kind of fetishize the other, and that, so they're on the level with each other because they, he wants an American girl, she wants a British guy, and they can even acknowledge that they don't even care who the other person is. They're like, we want the same things from each other.
Yeah.
Make it happen. Love action.
Yeah, it's consensual, and they both want one thing from the other person, and they both get it. And it's like, and then they go back to their homelands and tell all their friends.
They just want a story,
the experience. Yeah.
Yeah, that's all they want is a story.
I like that. What's another? Okay, so we got two. We got two down. To hear that there were other stories about someone in a wheelchair or an African family, like trying to make ends meet, or the homosexual, you know, headmistress. It really saddens me. Like, I got this information off the internet, so I don't know if it's totally true. But like, if it is, the fact that those stories were cut to just add another white heterosexual boring love story to the mix, it makes me look at it through a different lens. Like, I already wasn't a huge fan of Love Actually, but now I'm like, really, you chose this story over telling the story of someone who's disabled who found love, or somebody who's secretly gay and found love? And like, that could have someone could have connected with that in 2003. Someone could have actually had a connection with the story, and this film, while it does have these moments of realness, could have had even more substance, and I could have forgiven the stupid Colin storyline, or, you know, a bunch of stupid things, because they are speaking to voices that are silenced. And in 2003, I think that was desperately needed. It's a little like tone deaf to me.
Yeah, I think this movie's trying to make as few waves as possible. It's trying to it's trying to appeal to as much of the paying audience as it can, predominantly white audience. And it's, you know, but it would be nice to think that they would try to, you know, reach people who don't see themselves on screen, that at least.
Because that's the whole point. That's the whole point of the story, is love is all around, and love exists in many forms. And
apparently it's like three forms.
Seriously. But like, love is accessible to everyone, regardless of religion, ethnicity, like sexuality. Love should be accessible, and everyone is deserving of love. And that is what the message should be. And I think it tries to be, but then you watch it and you're like, it's really just a bunch of white couples.
The only, like, Chiwetel Ejiofor is the only like non-white character who I think has a significant.
Say it again.
Chewie. He's the only non-white guy, the character who has a significant amount of, you know, a presence in the movie, I would say. There are other characters, but he's the only one who has, like, who's, like, a character, and then he literally has nothing to do. Like, he literally, there's not even, like, two beats or an arc where he's just, like, am I too old for my bride? Like, did we rush into this? You know, like, he should have something where he's just, like, something to chew on, you know, something to chewettle on, and he's got nothing.
Oh, my God.
Can, like, what do you think when he read this part, he was like, wait, so my best man is in love with my wife. They have this secret. And then I
know.
Like, Keira Knightley would go right in and be like, yo, guess what just happened? I feel like she would just tell him, like, why would she hold her secret with Andrew Lincoln, why would she hold that and, like, above, like, communication with her spouse, you know?
And Andrew Lincoln, like, what kind of a friend is that? Like,
this guy fucking sucks.
Like, homie, you literally filmed this girl and we're never gonna tell her. What were you gonna do with that film? Like, red flags. And then you just show up and you're like, oh, this will fix everything. Like, this is a good idea. I should just silently tell her I'm in love with her, walk away, and then just go back to normal. Like, no, like, it's just, it's not romantic.
He's probably
going to
go,
all.
Like, beat off in an alley and murder someone, and then he'll get out of the system. Should I cut that out?
I mean, it would have made it more entertaining. It would have been okay, he's legitimately crazy.
It's the new Jack the Ripper. It's Andrew Lincoln the Ripper. Like, it's like, this guy's got some, like, he's got, like, it's like his attention to Keira Knightley isn't love. It's a compulsion. Like, it's like some, I don't know. I like to think
it's like Jeffrey Dahmer.
Well, I like to think that Chiwetel Ejiofor and Andrew Lincoln played high school teachers. They were, like, one's a history teacher, one's a math teacher. And they met Keira Knightley when she was a sophomore. And they both were, like, infatuated with her. And Andrew Lincoln just, like, was like, well, I can't do it. And then Chiwetel waited until she's 18. And he's like, will you marry me? She's like, yes. And then Andrew Lincoln's like, fuck, I could have done that.
It's some Shakespearean. It's like some Shakespearean novel. Like, it's just like this.
Lolita's.
Yay.
There's a lot of implications. I'm curious. Like, how do they meet? How old is Keira Knightley's character supposed to be? Like, if
17.
I doubt.
Oh, yeah.
But if she is supposed to be however old, like, there's no way. She's supposed to be presumably the same age or similar to the other two, which is weird that she's not.
I mean, you look at Pirates of the Caribbean, and how old was Orlando Bloom in that?
He was 48.
Like, she...
The young 48.
She was, I'm gonna do the math real quick. Pirates of the Caribbean came out in 2003, right?
Bloom was,
and Orlando Bloom
looks like,
so he was 10 years older than her. Like, and then Johnny Depp, like, let's not, don't even get me started. Johnny Depp was even older, and they kiss. Like, it's, It's a perpetuating problem in Hollywood that probably won't ever get solved. But you know, I totally agree with you. It's weird, and Andrew Lincoln is not romantic. I think the gesture, I would freak out if like one of Jordan's friends like was like, I'm actually in love with you. I'd be like
whoa, wait, wait.
And then I'd go tell Jordan. I'd be like, dude, you'll never.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah, the fact that I'm just curious, like if she's supposed to be pretty young, which let's say she, I don't know. It's just like, if he's obsessed with her, how long has he been obsessed with her? How long has he known her? If you go back 3 years, like she doesn't even have her driver's license yet. So I'm like, God.
And what is he doing with that VHS tape?
Well, what do you think he's doing?
We have one more storyline we haven't even brushed on. It's the Colin Firth one.
It's fine.
Just fine. It's like
I'm just like so I like forget. It's so well, all of Colin Firth's movies and characters are just fine. It's just like it's fine. Like King's Speech, it's like it's really not bad. It's just fine.
Mr. Darcy. Oh come on.
I haven't seen that one. Yeah, what do you think about that one?
Another storyline where I was kind of like, oh yeah, I forgot about them. Like every time I would see them, I'm like, oh yeah, he hired this girl to do God knows what. What is with all these women with no professions just showing up and working? Like they never explain their job. It's never like.
Wasn't she like a personal assistant? He's like a writer or something.
What is she doing? She's just staying at his cottage in France and then she leaves. Like I think I
kind of tuned this one out. Like I think every time I saw Colin Firth on screen, I was like, oh, it's intermission time, and I just go like make tea. And I come back whenever Keira Knightley's back on screen. That's what it felt like. I was just like, I can like, yeah.
Production companies should just hire Colin Firth to just show up in like, you know, halfway point of the play. And everyone just gets up and is like, oh, it's intermission.
Oh, Colin
Firth style.
Yeah. It's like when you're watching a horror movie and it's like all dark and moody and you're like kind of on edge because it's like a really good horror movie. And there's a daylight scene. You're like, oh, okay. I can like relax for like 5 minutes. It's like that.
Or like after the intro, you know, where it's like a flash forward and then it's like 5 years ago. And then it shows like a family in a car driving to move into the house. You're like, oh, I have time.
Yeah.
I'm going to go take a dump.
I know. I'm not going to pause the movie. I'm just going to let it play and try to time it.
Yeah. I'm just going to go like, you know, do my laundry real quick and then I'll come back in time for the slashing and murdering. Yeah, no, I definitely didn't I've watched this movie so many times and I never get the details of why they fall in love or why. I understand the cuteness of, oh, they're saying the same things to each other but in different languages. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
But then he just shows up and like wants to marry her and I always feel like I missed part of the movie. I always feel like, you know, because I'm usually watching on network television and I'm like, well, maybe they cut some scenes out because I don't know how he got from that point to that point. And yeah. I feel like there were some scenes that were just removed and they just figured everyone would just put it together.
I will say I love the end when they have the whole parade of people. Like, I think this movie's well staged, it's like, okay, the build up here and you're cross cutting. Maybe it's not that hard to do, but I just appreciate everything was swelling at the right moment. And so that scene where it's near the end and he's marching and it's just gathered, all the town is walking with them. And you hear people and he's going to go kill her. It's like, oh, I thought that was funny.
Okay, that was another, you know, another one of my cringy quotes. It's like, they're going to kill Aurelia. Like,
thought that was funny. I laughed.
Was that supposed to be funny? I laughed because of how...
Don't say you laughed because how unfunny it was. Because if you laughed.
No, I laughed because you brought it up. Because I wrote it down. Because I was just like, okay, great. Great joke.
No, that's just cracked me up. Because I wasn't expecting that. It's just like, right when I just that cracked
me
up. It's a fantastic movie. You know it's a fantastic movie.
Oh, the fact that the secretary sex slave, she dresses as a devil for the holiday party. Like,
yeah.
Why has this has this director ever heard of symbolism? Like, you don't need to like be like, get it? She's the devil. Get it? Because she's trying to seduce him and he's married. Like, you get it? You got it? We should put them devil horns on her just to make sure everyone gets it. Why? It didn't make any sense. Why would someone dress up as a devil to a holiday party?
Halloween party. A holiday party, yeah. They just want to really make sure everyone knows what where their intentions are. I don't know.
She might as well just wrote a, like, had a sign on her back that said, kick me. Like, it was just, like, so, like, we get it. Like, she was so just, like, did she even have a name? Like, God, like, give this, like, they were just, they could have had, like, a blow-up doll, and she would have served the same purpose.
Lars and the Real Girl, yeah, that'd be great. I don't know, what else is there to say? I mean, probably a lot, but I can't think of anything. Yeah, I genuinely enjoyed this movie. I don't know. I didn't enjoy it 2 months ago, and then I watched it again, and I was like, oh my God, I remember that. So, oh, that one, that part. Yeah, did the movie change, or did I change?
I love that we can, like, come together and agree to disagree on movies, and, like...
I know what changed.
What changed?
I started taking an SSRI, and now I love Actually.
A lot of people enjoy this film, and I guess if you look at it for what it is, it's just like a very superficial holiday movie, then sure, it serves its purpose. But there's so many missed opportunities, and I think that's what upsets me, is that it's like, you know, love is all around. Like, love is beautiful. You see, it's this couple and this couple and this couple. You know, that's unrequited love. Yeah, yeah. You know, and it's just so just surface level. It's the surface of love, and it could be so much deeper.
I feel like that's asking a lot for this movie, but yeah, it is a surface level thing. It's like, it's trying to convey an emotion or a feeling and preserve that, like a saran wrap, bubble wrap for almost 2.5 hours. It's like, and I think it does a bad job. Like, it's a type of movie, if you were to watch it at a holiday party, you could tune out constantly and still kind of get.
Yeah,
it's like, there's a whole bunch of these movies, like Valentine's Day is one of them. Like, there's a whole bunch of them where it's just a bunch of ensembles, and they have to kind of play like with, they're very,
it's these little vignettes of love stories. That's what it is. It's a little like storybook full of love stories, and you know, I appreciate it for what it is, but it's a 2 thumbs down for me. I can't stomach it. I've watched it multiple times, and every time I watch it, I find something else wrong with it, and I can't get past it. I can't. I just can't. I'd rather watch Harry Potter and see a bunch of Brits there, you know?
You know what I watched recently?
Yeah.
Again, was When Harry Met Sally. And I love
such a good film. Such a good movie.
I watched it on mute, on silent, on a plane, because I didn't have the right headphones. And I was like, so good. Even without audio, so good.
Even, because you know what they're saying, and it's freaking Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan. Like, could you pick even, a like, better Carrie like, Fisher? Duo?
Yeah, Carrie Fisher and Bruno Kirby. As a, like, everything Bruno about it is Kirby, just so good.
It's perfectly cast.
It's like, there's nothing, I'm not saying this Love Actually is, but there's just nothing like a really good, like a movie that pulls you, like a romantic movie that you fall for. And we're not, like, we all have different tastes, right? I feel like there is no perfect movie that one is, but like a movie that's just like, God, there's just something like, yeah, it's the casting. Yeah. It's like, how do you pull people in? It's just really cool when it works.
Well, it's the story, the characters are so likable. Like Meg Ryan, she's funny and she's so, like, you identify with her. And like Billy Crystal is just so charming and he's so funny, quick, and you just fall in love with him. Yeah. It really is. I think you're right. I think a good rom-com is about the audience falling in love with the couple. Yeah. And I think When Harry Met Sally, you do that. And there's Carrie Fisher, like, you're right, you're right. I know you're right. Like, she says it like 8 times, and you just, every time you're like.
I gotta watch it with audio again, shit. Well, even just a scene where, so Harry and Sally meet the first time, right? They have that cross-country road trip. Then the second time, it's 5 years later, and she's, like, making out with this blonde guy who looks like the male version of her in the airport. And then Billy Crystal walks by, and he does a double take, and he walks back. And you're like, oh, of course he recognizes Meg Ryan. But he recognizes the guy. He doesn't even recognize her. I was like, that's such a cute, like, it's maybe really simple, but just when they're writing, Nora Ephron's writing it, like, that's just such a cute little, like, oh, he recognizes the other guy, and then he recognizes her. Like, it's just, this is an extra little, I don't know why, I was just so taken with all of it.
I know what scene you're talking about, and I never actually, like, thought about it like that, because I'm just so, the movie's so familiar to me, like, that I never realized that you could watch that, and your first impression is like, oh, he's gonna say something to her. But then he's like, Joe, I thought it was you. Like, you know, and you're like, oh, you know, it's the guy. And then you're like, are they gonna talk? Is he gonna recognize it? Like, what's gonna go? Yeah. Oh, it's beautiful. Mm. Chef's kiss of a film.
Yeah.
All right, let's wrap this up. Love Actually, we are split. Ooh, that was like textbook Split.
Why, if someone is debating to watch this movie, whether they should watch it or not, what would you say in a quick 10-second, 20-second bit? Like, why should they not watch it?
Oh, I would say watch it because it is a classic. But, you know, keep in mind, it is very dated. It did not age well, and it is not an accurate depiction of love being all around.
Love, like, I like how you included that love being all around. It's not an accurate representation of love being all around.
It's love being in some places, but it's broader than that.
It's love, love in dark corners. It's a bunch of people with compulsions and compulsions, unrequited love, unexamined neuroses, unexamined, like, people who are just like, why? No one in this movie is like, what? Why am I this way?
It's men who are like, oh, she has a mentally ill brother. Fuck that. Like, I'm not putting up with that. Like, move on. Love.
Yeah. Laura Linney is great, though. Do you like Laura Linney?
Mm. Me too. I love a good Laura Linney character. So, well, okay, what is your 10-second pitch
to watch it?
Yeah, or just what would you, if someone asked you, like, what are your thoughts on Love Actually? What would be your 10-second, like, little, you know, elevator pitch?
What else are you going to do while you're waiting for jury duty? are you not going to watch the movie they wheel out in that cart? You know, like, you're in seventh grade science class and you have a not a guest lecturer, you know, but like a substitute teacher.
Yeah, your phone battery's low. Like, you don't, there's no charger. What are you going to do in the jury duty waiting room? Like, there's magazines that are 18 years old. Let's do this again in the new year. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone. We hope you enjoyed this holiday episode of Love Actually. And we hope you actually have a wonderful holiday full of love.
Love Actually is all around.
And ice cream castles in the air, and feather canyons everywhere. Looked at clouds that way.